We don't generally venture into the world of royal goss on Life Matters ever really, but we do often talk about families and resilience. And if ever there were a case study of families and resilience, it's the royals across the world. And you may have heard Queen Beatrix of Holland has decided to hand the Dutch crown to her son in April this year. This means she'll be ending 33 years of her own reign and more than 100 years, in fact, of female rule on the Dutch throne. Well, across the North Sea in the UK, Queen Elizabeth has, of course, been on the throne for over 60 years now. And in 2013, it might sound strange to you that there are, in fact, 10 countries in Europe where monarchies are still going strong. Their role may be mainly ceremonial, but my next guest argues their role shouldn't be dismissed. Peter Conradi is the author of The Great Survivors, How Monarchy Made It Into the 21st Century, and he's also co-author of The King's Speech. You may have seen the film, and he joined me a short while ago from his London office.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
What do you think the monarchies across Europe, the remaining monarchies, bring to the countries they rule?
I think they bring a number of things. I mean, they bring stability, they bring a sense of tradition, they're an integral part of the culture in all these countries. And I suppose the most important thing is that they provide a head of state who is above politics. You know, he or she is not part of the political process. She is there, he or she are there, often for a very long period of time. Obviously, Queen Elizabeth has been there since 1952. Beatrix, you just mentioned, has been there since 1980. So, you know, they provide continuity there. They're a symbol of the country who is there. And there's always this sort of feeling, I think, that when the political parties fall out among themselves, the president, if you have a president, the president gets dragged into it inevitably. When you have a king or a queen, they don't.
So for you, they are more than ceremonial.
Yes, they are, because they are an integral part of the political system. I mean, one sees that in Britain and indeed in Australia, and you see it in all the other countries as well. They have very, very important ceremonial roles, but for example, in the Netherlands, the monarch does have a role, for example, in the formation of governments. The same is true in Belgium. For example, you know, after an election, these are countries where they have a large number of political parties. It isn't very clear always who is going to form the next government. And so the monarch does get very actively involved in the process of appointing someone to sort of to sound out the political parties, then appointing someone else, a politician, to actually form a government. And, you know, they are quite actively involved in it, in a way that, for example, in Britain, Queen Elizabeth isn't.
What you're describing there is sort of an independent overseer, but are they truly independent?
I think they are. I mean, obviously, they are human beings. They will have their own political views. In almost every case, you know, they keep those views to themselves. I mean, if you were to ask me, Queen Elizabeth, is she conservative? Is she Labour? Is she left of centre? Is she right of centre? You know, it would be very, very difficult to answer. You know, and it's the same in other countries. Maybe there's a suspicion from time to time. Queen Beatrix's mother, Queen Juliana, was always said to be quite left-wing, against militarism, not very keen on sort of the traditional Dutch alliance with the Americans. But it's very rare that this ever translates into any action which will be perceived really to be unconstitutional.
Well, thinking about the Dutch monarchy, it is very interesting that Beatrix, she's in good shape, she's fit, you know, she's decided to abdicate the throne. And there's been a lot of conjecture about whether Queen Elizabeth in Britain should follow her cue. And many would argue, well, that's unlikely to happen with the British royal family. I mean, is the Dutch royal family quite a distinct entity in this way? And the fact that, I mean, we have Beatrix abdicating, her mother abdicated before her, and I think her mother's mother abdicated before her.
Yes, she did indeed. I mean, the Dutch monarchy is unique in this respect, or almost unique, because in Luxembourg, where they have a Grand Duke, they also abdicate. And it was kind of almost established by accident. Beatrix's grandmother, Wilhelmina, after the Second World War, wasn't in great health. She was quite old. She had a number of kind of political things weren't going very well. It was sort of the end of the Dutch Empire and so on. She abdicated And in a sense, she set that precedent, which her daughter and her granddaughter have followed. Elsewhere in Europe, abdication remains very much a dirty word. I mean, obviously
why
in Britain... Well, I mean, in Britain, there are the memories of 1936, the enforced abdication of Edward VIII in order to marry Wallis Simpson. You know, this wasn't... There's been, in a sense, a kind of a reaction against it. If abdication wasn't a dirty word before, then it certainly was as a result of that. The same thing in Belgium after the Second World War. King Leopold III had a sort of a complicated war, let's say. His country was occupied by the Nazis, and there were feelings that maybe he hadn't done everything he should have done to resist. A lot of animosity towards him after the war. Mm. He too abdicated. But, you know, in those cases outside Holland, abdication is something that is a kind of a deviation from the norm. It's something you do because something has gone wrong. Whereas the conception of monarchy, certainly in Britain, is that the monarch is somehow ordained by God. She's there, and it's a kind of a sacred duty which she has to fulfill all the way until death.
Mm. Peter Conradi is my guest this morning on Life Matters here on RN. He is the author of The Great Survivors, How Monarchy Made It into the 21st Century. And he's speaking to us from his London Times office. Peter, Australia is part of the Commonwealth. There's an ongoing debate here, as you know, about whether the Queen is relevant to us as a country anymore and what happens when she leaves her post. Is there any semblance of a Republican type movement or an anti-monarchy movement in Europe?
There is indeed. I mean, in every country where there is a monarchy, there is a Republican movement. You know, it's not just in Australia. You know, we certainly have one in Britain called Republic. There are Republican movements in Holland, in Belgium, in the Scandinavian countries, in Spain, everywhere. Now, their popularity really goes up and down. It kind of fluctuates over time, and it seems to correspond largely to the behavior of the royal family from time to time. So if that royal family is going through a good patch, then Republican support tends to go down. If the royal family is going through a bad patch, then it's boom time for the Republicans. So, I mean, for example, in Sweden at the moment, there's been quite a lot of controversy over the king there, and he's rather colourful sex life. Some rather lurid revelations have come out there in the last couple of years. There's the same thing going on in Spain, again, a king, not a queen, again with a slightly lurid sex life. And again, this sort of same hit, plus a bit of financial corruption thrown in as well. And, you know, in both those countries, the Republicans are doing relatively well. But, you know, overall, if you look at the statistics, because there are lots of opinion polls that are done on this, typically support for the monarchy tends to be around the 70-80% kind of level, with the Republicans on about 20-30%. And there's a kind of a, you know, there's not just the individual behavior of the monarchs, but there's a kind of a life cycle that they tend to follow. You know, when you have a new young monarch, popularity tends to go up, particularly when they start to have children. There are all these sort of pictures of these sort of cute young royals running around. When they get into middle age and maybe the kids stop being cute toddlers and turn into awkward teenagers that do embarrassing things, then popularity tends to dip, you know, and then so it goes on.
Is there the same sort of paparazzi culture that pursues the European royals outside of the UK?
There is indeed. I mean, I was quite surprised, because I, working in the British media, thought that we were the real shockers.
And you are the real shockers.
But there are others that are even more shocking. I mean, I was struck by, for example, in Norway. Norway is, one would have thought, a very civilized, a very liberal, a very decent country. That's certainly what I thought, until I had a contact for the book with someone who wrote for one of their tabloid magazines, and he was describing to me the most extraordinary tricks that they got up to when they were pursuing the woman who is now the crown princess of Norway, Mette Marit, her name is. She had a very, very checkered past. She was actually a single mother when she married the crown prince, which was another first. She had a lot of experience or contact with the drug scene, shall we say. And they went to all sorts of lengths to find out about her past. They contacted lots of boyfriends. They paid an awful lot of money to find out lurid stories about her. They even bought up her father, who was quite a sad alcoholic character. They sent him into the wedding with a hidden camera to take pictures.
Father.
You know, I mean, really terrible,
How did the marriage, how's it gone?
Well, the marriage has actually gone remarkably well. She's transformed herself from a kind of a wild child, who in fact had some of her wildest period in Australia when she was there for a year.
Of course.
Picked up all sorts of bad habits, apparently, which she took back to Norway. And, you know, she's turned into an absolutely demure, perfect crown princess who one day will be a great queen. And, you know, by the same token, the Danish press very, very actively pursued Mary Donaldson from Tasmania, who, as I'm sure you know and your listeners
indeed
will know, is destined to be the next Queen of Denmark. I mean, she had a terrible paparazzi problems.
So in all this, Peter, it seems to me that the European royals even survive some of the, you know, the ghastly scandals and seem to be a kind of more flexible bunch in terms of how they partner and who they connect with.
Yes, I mean, let's say the scandals, I mean, you know, human nature being what it is, I think the scandals are the same everywhere. I think they've maybe been quite relaxed about the choice of marital partners, certainly when it comes to the current generation of heirs to the throne, including Willem Alexander, who's going to be the new king of the Netherlands. You know, but there has been controversy about these partners as well. I mean, Crown Princess Mary had a very scandal-free background. That was no problem at all. In Sweden, there were problems, though, with the husband of the Crown Princess, who will become the Queen Regnant, the ruling Queen of Sweden. You know, he was her fitness coach, so there were a lot of questions asked about how appropriate it was for her to marry her fitness coach. Mm-hmm. In Holland, Willem Alexander's wife, who's Argentinian, there were some problems there because it turned out that her father had been a member of the junta that got up to all sorts of terrible things in Argentina in the 1980s. So that caused a lot of embarrassment.
It's real life, isn't it?
It is real life. And I think, you know, there is a sense in which while their parents were, you know, the current monarchs who are probably now in their 70s, 80s, were mostly marrying very carefully or marrying into other royal families, you know, the current generation now in their 40s, late 30s, 40s or so, have been much freer to marry whom they like, in the same way, in the sense that in Britain, Prince William could marry Kate Middleton, who, you know, was not aristocratic, who was not from a royal family. Clearly, she was just an ordinary middle-class woman.
Mm. Peter Conradi, thank you so much for joining us on Life Matters this morning to give us a much more nuanced understanding of the tradition of the monarchy across Europe. We appreciate it very much.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Peter Conradi there. His latest book is called The Great Survivors, How Monarchy Made It Into the 21st Century. We'll pop the details on the Life Matters website, abc.net.au/radionational. Look for Life Matters. And yes, those royal stories, they are a resilient mob.